First of the new legislature, and it is 1:32. Senator Geisel, Senator Pascavan, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. And our committee staff for this year will be my staff, Dana Owen of my staff, and Ann Krickelberg from the Senate Records. She'll be keeping minutes and calling names for roll call votes. And if you knew or know ahead of time that you will be absent, please let Dana Owen know so we may note that. It'll be common practice to hold bills after their first hearing, that is, not to move them on the day they're first brought before us, but to hold them for further discussion. However, we may violate that rule in extraordinary circumstances, in fact, maybe today, or if the bill is completely uncontroversial, we will go ahead and move it. First bill on the agenda for this afternoon is executive order, and this is slightly unusual. Executive Order 115, realigning the oversight authority of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and my staffer Dana Owen will speak to the bill, and then if there are folks signed up to testify, we will hear testimony. I understand Commissioner Bell is wanting to testify, so we'll do it right away.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dana Owen. I'm staff to this committee, and it would be unusual for me to lead off on an item like this. But to be perfectly frank, executive orders are something of an odd duck for the legislature. First of all, if you do nothing, if you absolutely take no action at all, if we don't have this hearing, it will go into effect 60 days after the governor introduced it. There has been a history of some difficulty about how the legislature handles this. In the past, it's been typical for committees like this to simply write a memo to the Senate president or to the Senate secretary saying, this is what we did with the executive order. And the problem with that is they felt that they needed some more structure to that. So this year, for the first time, we have a committee report, similar to a committee report for bills. The major difference that you'll note, though, is there is no place on the committee report for individual recommendations. There is a place for the committee recommendation. And that's fairly loose at this point. The options that are given are you approve, you disapprove. There's nothing to say that you are neutral or don't take any action on it. I should note that if for some reason you decide to disapprove of an executive order, it would require a special concurrent resolution that we'd have to have drafted to go along with the disapproval. Apart from that, I think I wanted to note that this issue of the transfer of authority for the Alaska Aerospace Corporation came up in our overview of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and it seemed like at least one of the committees from the Senate should probably review this executive order. So we've chosen to go ahead. It's also been assigned to the State Affairs Committee. Unlike a bill, it doesn't go sequentially. Both committees receive the executive order at the same time. So with that, I think I will retire and let you call the first witness.
Thanks, Dana. And do we have any folks signed up to testify? We'll find out shortly. Right? We'll let Commissioner Bell go first. Commissioner Bell?
Well, thank you. And for the record, I'm Susan Bell, Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I appreciate the opportunity to address this group this afternoon. My points are going to be brief. I want to be sure that we're very clear in our department's support of the development and the growth of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation and this industry in our state. We're very proud of the growth and the successes that Alaska Aerospace have had since its inception in 1995, including the Air Force launch that was very successful this last November. One of the things that we look at in our department is what economic and community benefits that an entity like this can bring to the state. And I wanted to cite a couple of things from some recent independent studies, both from Northern Economics and McDowell Group. Recently, aerospace's contributions to the economy totaled nearly $30 million in direct and indirect spending, 235 jobs, direct and indirect, and a payroll of more than $12 million. That same year, more than 250 independent Alaska firms provided goods and services to the corporation. So again, you can see that aside from the direct employment of 38 employees in Kodiak and Anchorage, there's extensive community and economic benefits from the corporation. Of course, launch periods like the one we had in November and the one that's anticipated in early summer bring an intensive activity. And that's important, especially when you're looking at when peak season for hotels, car rental, and other business activity declines. The corporation brings an important aspect in diversifying our economy with high-tech, high-wage jobs, and it's a particularly unique market in terms of serving both commercial as well as military customers. And our department believes Alaska Aerospace Corporation needs to be positioned where it's most likely going to succeed and achieve its core mission. And in that, I want to clearly state that we share the opinion and support the executive order that we believe Alaska's aerospace industry and this corporation will be better realized by positioning the department in the Department of Veterans and Military Affairs. We recognize that through their activities, they have the ability to help provide access to federal military contracts for both sustainable funding and future launches. I also think that the opportunities for commercial launches won't be that won't be diminished, but I think in looking at where it can best succeed, this will help strengthen the organization. So just to briefly summarize, there are definitely important economic benefits. It's a high-wage sector that there's great interest in growing in our state, high-tech, high-wage. I think DMVA has the ability to internally and externally position Aerospace Corporation for greater sustainability and future growth, and ultimately that in turn, whether we have commercial or military launches, will help strengthen our community and economic development opportunities and grow private sector opportunities. So we have expressed our interest in remaining engaged, whether that's through retaining a board seat at some point in the future or through just working across departmental lines, as we often do with other agencies. We want to be a partner in developing the organization. So thank you for the time to make some brief comments this afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner. And just for the record, Senator Betty Davis has joined the committee. Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Bell? Senator Pascal.
Speaking towards the, both the military and commercial aspect of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and not necessarily you to answer, but possibly you can, but what proportionality do you see in the short term, so to speak, 5 years or so, as far as what proportion is going to be military, what proportion is going to be commercial? Is that what is the impetus behind Executive Order 115?
Through the chair, Senator Pascavan, I think that my colleagues from aerospace can more specifically answer that, but what I've learned through working both in the governor's office and through my time in the past 6 months as commissioner is that the military needs to be a core element of it, and again, not only for launches, but the sustainability funding. So I think it's significant, but I think that they can answer more specifically.
Further questions for Commissioner Bell? Commissioner, thank you very much for testifying. And next to testify will be Dale Nash, CEO of Alaska Aerospace Corporation. Congratulations.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Dale Nash, Chief Executive Officer of Alaska Aerospace Corporation. I've been with the corporation for 4 years and CEO for the last three. And some of you may have heard in the news that last night I happened to lose my president and chief operating officer, General Tom Case, who left to become the chancellor of the University of Alaska Anchorage. But I have had the good fortune to have as a contractor a former general, former lieutenant governor, Craig Campbell, who I was able to corner and talk him into coming on as the president and chief operating officer. And what I would like to testify to today is in support of this bill and hopefully answer some of the questions as I go through. One of the key things that I saw work extremely well on the space shuttle program, I worked for Thiokol Corporation that builds the solid rocket boosters in Utah, and they moved me to run their Florida operations. As NASA moved to consolidate into one contractor, I moved to Lockheed Martin, and then a company called United Space Alliance was created. It's 50% owned by Boeing, 50% owned by Lockheed, sort of mortal combatants that also team in this business. They created United Space Alliance to run the shuttle program. One thing that worked very well was to have someone with aerospace expertise in one of the top two positions, either CEO or chief operating officer, and the other as an astronaut. And that was a very, very good model to have. And because our customer is primarily the Department of Defense, mostly the Air Force, but NASA is a component of that, I used that model when I brought General Case on. I certainly know how to launch rockets. I know a lot of NASA, some commercial, even though that is a smaller portion of the market in the U.S., but I used that model very successfully to operate as a team with General Case, and I've got had the good fortune now to backfill with General Greg Campbell, former lieutenant governor, to backfill that. That's a very, very good model because you do deal in the space business, but you deal with military customers, you deal with NASA, and NASA is very much like dealing with the Air Force as well. And by the way, when we talk about commercial launches, when you do commercial launches, the companies you deal with are companies named Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, ATK. So even if it is a commercial launch, you typically operate like you do on a defense contract, whether it's Missile Defense or Air Force or NASA. You will use similar contracts, similar accounting methods. The Defense Contract Audit Agency we always deal with. So the launch business in the U.S. does not have a lot of differentiation between Air Force, NASA, or even the commercial side. They look very similar. So one of the questions was, what is that breakdown? Our breakdown out of the 15 launches to date have been essentially all 15 have been federal government in one form or the other. This last launch, this Air Force launch, Space Test Program, S-26, who several senators and representatives made it out for, was the most complicated launch, this is according to the Air Force, that they have put up in 20 years. It had 7 satellites and 16 experiments. It had Air Force experiments, had NASA experiments. 3 of the satellites were NASA. It had at least 3 university satellites on it. It was a very complicated and an extremely successful mission launched out of there. So that is typically how you will go in this. It was an Air Force rocket with NASA satellites, Air Force satellites, and university satellites. We do speak in support of the realignment. We have done well under Commerce and want to continue that relationship under Commerce. But you really need to look to your customers like they want you to look. When it's the Air Force, we are not trying to become Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, which is really our direct competitor, because West Coast launches are polar launches going around the poles on the Earth. East Coast launches are equatorial in nature, heading from west to east, and will go around the equator or above and below, but around the equator. So that's Virginia and Florida. So we really don't compete against the East Coast. We do compete against California directly, but we also team with them too, just like the company I work for, United Space Alliance, where you know one time Boeing and Lockheed are against each other, the next time they're teamed together. We need to look a lot to Vandenberg like Vandenberg. without a lot of the overhead and inertia that just comes with a big organization. We need to look to NASA like NASA, and being administratively under DMVA, that certainly helps facilitate that. In fact, this last mission, because we have a memorandum of agreement with Space Florida, which is the counterpart to Alaska Aerospace, and have they've been successful in around a couple of years longer than Alaska Aerospace. But we had support from the Florida National Guard. They actually helped operate our range that will control the rocket and make sure that it flies safely and download all the data and everything. So we had assistance from the Florida National Guard. We hope to have the same thing with the Alaska National Guard. The precedence has been set. The space industry knows and understands that and embraces that. And you have trained operators up in Fort Greeley with the National Guard, so it's a good training opportunity for them. There are other things that we believe will work as well. So while we have been successful to date underneath Commerce, especially with the budget challenges that are out there, we need to look at how we can look and act and be a national range. And that's really how the national space industry is looking at it, whether it's Air Force or NASA. They talk about four federal ranges, two on the East Coast being Cape Canaveral, Kennedy Space Center, together one large complex. Wallops Island, Virginia, which is a NASA facility and really our first space launch facility, was out of there. Vandenberg, which is the big West Coast one. And then they want another backup one, which is a key part of the infrastructure. And Kodiak is rapidly becoming recognized as that. So it's one where we're trying to fit into that niche, still remain space-owned, space or state-owned and state-controlled, but really tap into resources and assets that we can loan and borrow back and forth across the national space industry. And, again, we speak in support of this and do look forward to continued close relationship with Commerce as well.
Thank you, Mr. Nash, for your testimony. Questions?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator. Yes, Senator Menard has joined the committee hearing as well. Senator Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested, if we were to make this shift, would the goals and mission statements remain the same?
Through the chair, yes, they would.
I apologize if that was spoke to earlier, but
not directly. What through the chair? What happened is several states were encouraged through the Commercial Space Act back in the late 90s, law passed, and through national space policy, which continues to be updated. In fact, there's the Obama administration is going through an additional update of the national space policy, which may bode well for us in the responsive nature of launches, in that we can get it out under 30 days and hope to continue to build 224 hours. That's a longer story. But it really has not changed. Before we all, and mine is turned off, by the way. Before we all had cell phones that worked, remember we had a brick, and you could only work in your zone. If you drove out of your area, it wouldn't switch from one to the next. There was a very real competition, I guess much like beta or VHS technology or high-definition DVD and Blu-ray. There was plans for a lot of satellite constellations up there. There is one today, Iridium, and it is going forward, and we'll put new ones up. But there was Globalstar and several others where they expected to be launching thousands of commercial satellites. Even the Air Force with the Atlas V and Delta IV said, we will be the secondary customer. It will be commercial that will be the primary one. Well, cellular technology came so you could switch anywhere, and fiber optic made it so that everyone was connected. That market disappeared. Now, the market we continue to service and pursue is primarily the military and the federal government. That is not a bad market. It's not the thousands of satellites we all expected, but it is still a very good market, and we are a player in that. So we have not changed our goals or objectives or anything. It's the nature of the business that that has changed, and in Kodiak many times I'll talk about there was a time when there were a lot of king crab close to Kodiak and a lot of shrimp. Well, if you bought a fishing boat, you may no longer be fishing for the king crab and shrimp right next to Kodiak, but you're still fishing. You're getting a halibut or cod or something else, and that's sort of what's happened. What we anticipated did not develop, but we have developed a very good market, and we're extremely well-respected within the industry. Representative Sadler, Senator French, and there are several others I forgot, but many who were out there for the launch. And if you saw the interaction and the respect that we had from NASA and the Air Force, we are viewed in very high regard. And this will only enhance that with a close relationship with the DMVA.
Further questions for Mr. Nash? Mr. Pascal.
If I'm hearing you correctly, and I believe I am, that you believe that Alaska is sending the appropriate message to Alaska's customers by moving to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Pasvan, very much so. And as you helped us change our name 2 years ago to remove the development, that we really are an Alaska Aerospace Corporation and not an advocacy group, or to be confused with Juneau Economic Development or Anchorage Economic Development, it clearly sends the right message that we are in the game. We understand how you launch military payloads, how you launch NASA payloads, how you launch NOAA payloads or other payloads. It sends a very good message. Not that we haven't performed and done well before, but it just, you want to look to your customers like they want you to look. Thanks.
Senator.
Congratulations on Craig Campbell as the president. I think that's a great choice, so I just want to put that on the record.
Actually, I was going to further question for Mr. Nash. Thank you. Well, you're relieved right now.
Chair and through the chair, thank you for the congratulations, and I couldn't agree more.
Thank you. And in fact,
I'm so sorry.
Well,
I just have one Senator
Bernard
thing. Can all of us committee members at the table here, is it safe that we can leave this meeting and we say we agree to pass this out of the committee in your favor? Is it safe to say this will increase economic development? Because that's what I'm about. Is that a fair statement?
Through the chair, yes, I absolutely believe it will. And there may well be, there are no guarantees, but we have continued discussions with the federal customers that there are more avenues to help support us with sustaining or development costs under DMVA because it fits in their model. And yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your patience with me.
Thank you, Senator.
One thing I have neglected, Chairman Egan, our next launch is tentatively the first week or so of May. It will be beautiful out in Kodiak. I would like to invite each and every one of you there. We will have hopefully a nice tent set up and a big spread, and watching the launch on television is nothing like watching it in person to see and hear a 500,000 pounds of thrust as this rocket roars out of sight about as fast as you can put your head up. You would all enjoy it, and you are all welcome to come visit.
Great, thank you, and hopefully we will not be in special session. We'll be able to take you up on the offer. I know he's not signed up to testify, but I just wanted to welcome in the committee room. Could you imagine a business card like this? For a lieutenant governor, general, commissioner, and now president, Craig Campbell, it's great to have you in the committee room. And, General, we're more than happy if you'd like to say a few words in support. And congratulations on your another new position.
Thank you, Senator, members of the committee. I won't take a position on the executive order other than tell you it's a great executive order and you should pass it on. But I do appreciate the opportunity. I'm Craig Campbell. As of this morning, the announced president and chief operating officer of Alaska Aerospace, it becomes effective February 15th. So the record's clear. I'm not on the payroll yet. But I do appreciate the fact that you recognize that, and I'm looking forward to working with this organization. As Dale Nash mentioned, and as Commissioner Bell mentioned, this corporation is on the cusp of being able to do some really good development in aerospace industry work in Alaska. And just being aligned properly so we send the right message to our federal partners that we're working with is going to be very positive. So thank you for your consideration of this, and I look forward to it going forward.
Thank you. We can still highest rank Lieutenant Governor. It's good to have you in Juneau
again. As I always say, Senator, it's Craig. Thank you.
It's great. Okay. Now we do have Pierre McHugh signed up to testify on behalf of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Gets you every time. It confuses me every morning. It's a good time. Either way, the bar has been set very high, Mr. Chairman. You can hear that there's a lot of enthusiasm in this room for this specific corporation and for the mission, and rightfully so. There's four states, including Alaska, that participate in this aerospace activity, rocket launches, and we have a unique polar orbit access that only competing nations have. No other state has this opportunity. So we really see this as a way to catapult, with the continued involvement from Commissioner Bell and her corporation, or her commission, I should say, not her corporation. I often see her as a CEO. She's so business savvy. So her department's involvement is going to help continue that momentum in the corporation, and then our access into potential infrastructure development funds from the Air Force, from Missile Defense Agency, from these different federal assets and entities, we'll be able to springload our opportunity to build this business. And we want to take this on. We want to make it happen, and we support it, and we won't let you down.
Thank you, McHugh, and I apologize for butchering your name.
Never a problem, Senator.
Questions? Thank you very much for testifying. And we do have online Curtis Thayer. Curtis, maybe you just ought to be quiet. You're offering to answer questions, but things seem like they're moving forward fairly rapidly and in a positive manner. Curtis, would you like to testify? Hopefully Curtis may not even be online. And we also have Mike Ford of the Department of Law here. Mike, would you like to testify or answer any questions? That completes public testimony. Is anyone else in the audience or online that would wish to testify in favor or in opposition to this executive order? Hearing none. Committee action, and again, it's...
Before you ask for action, could I ask
Senator
a question? Davis. And probably it was already stated before I got here, but I'd like to know the percentage of money that we put in there from the state for this program. You said it's the four states. We make number four of the states that's involved in the program. How much money did we put from the state to support this program? And is the other part coming strictly from feds, or do you have other resources that you get it from?
Through the chair, and Dale may be able to assist me with this, but I believe the initial funding from the state was $15 million, and that part of looking at the business climate changes that he described in terms of commercial launches to government launches, one of the things that last year the state put $4 million in capital funds. This year in the FY12 budget request from the governor, there's again $4 million in capital. Part of that is signaling that it's important to keep, as we're in this transition period, to keep the doors open, the lights on, signal to our clients that the state's committed to this corporation. But there is a need for ongoing sustaining funds, and they do have concepts for additional capital development. But again, in terms of initial state investment and what last year and in this, or in the present year and in the next year, it's in comparison to the economic returns, has been, I would say, modest.
Okay, so this program has been in around for like 3 or 4 years, is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe it was 1995-1996 inception. So, again, there is.
Could you tell me a ballpark figure of what we have benefited from having this program financially?
Through the chair, it was able to look at some recent third-party studies. Dale's got more current information, so I'll through June 30th, 2010, a total of investment of nearly $300 million has been generated by the Kodiak Launch Complex, and Alaska, I've been corrected, Alaska funded $30.5 million with federal capital investments of $141 million. So again, the federal government has invested significantly in our aerospace program in the Kodiak Launch Complex. Alaska's initial investment was higher than I had initially said, but Alaska funded $30 million. And in my testimony earlier this afternoon, I had noted that in third-party studies, there were more than 235 jobs, direct and indirect, resulting from this, as well as 260 firms that provided goods and services to the corporation. So in addition to direct employment, there's quite a spinoff in not only the Kodiak area, but the greater South Central area as well.
Apparently I missed that. I was late coming in. Great. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Further questions for the commissioners, as long as she's at the table? Seeing none. Now, this is, again, a little different. To take action, this committee is going to have to, the whole committee will have to approve it, disapprove it, or offer no recommendation. It's the first time that we have been asked to approve an executive order to transfer from Department of Commerce to Department of Veterans and Military Affairs. So I would like to hear a motion.
I would move that we advance executive order number 115 from this committee to the next committee of referral with the unanimous consent of the committee, and I don't believe we can ask for individual recommendations. Is that
the way we understand it? Yes, we're not allowed to. We'll sign it in the affirmative. Is there objection? We got her done. Motion carries. It'll move along. And thank you very much, Commissioner, and Mr. Lieutenant Governor, and everybody else for attending. And it's moving along. And thank you, Curtis, for not testifying. Got right out of here. Next on the agenda is Senate Bill 59, extending the Board of Dental Examiners. And this does have a further referral to the Finance Committee. And just for information of the committee, there is another piece of legislation that we have been made aware of that has all committee extensions or for these boards to be extended under one piece of legislation. However, we are going to hear Senate Bill 59, and it's a very simple piece of legislation. It does extend the Board of Dental Examiners. And Dana Owen of my staff will present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, which is sponsoring this legislation. I need to point out that this legislation originated from the Dental Society, which approached us about making some changes to their statutes. Those changes have turned out to be about 19 pages of draft bill, and so we thought that it might be more expeditious to simply split the question in two. So what you have in front of you is, I'm delighted to present you a bill that's so simple. This simply extends the board for another 5 years. That number was really pulled out of the air. I was not aware, and I apologize to the committee, I was not aware that the audit that had been done on the board had recommended 8 years rather than five. So I think it would be certainly certainly within the committee's purview, but also probably highly recommended to accept the auditor's suggestion that you extend it to 8 years. And with that, I'll turn it over. I have to say that David Logan, is he online? We have David Logan online from the Dental Society. If you have any questions about how the how this bill would work or what the Dental Society has to say about it.
Okay, thanks, Dana. Questions for Mr. Owen before he departs?
Just a comment.
Sarah Bernard.
I would just like to speak as a senator that knows something about the dental field, that I appreciate the auditor's recommendation, and I, for one, would be very much in favor of extending it to 8 years. It's a wonderful profession that's highly respected, and I think they are deserving of the 8 years instead of the five.
Thank you, Senator Bernard. Further questions for Mr. Owen? Great, thank you, Dana. Again, David Logan from the Alaska Dental Society is online. If committee members have questions for Mr. Logan, he'll be more than happy to answer them. Are there questions for Mr. Logan? Seeing none, David, you're off the hook. Now,
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Do I hear a motion?
Before you,
Mr. Logan, and I would also like to hear from Pat Davis.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
I think Mr.
Okay,
Logan,
I didn't have Pat on
Dr.
the list.
Dr. Logan, I should say.
Yes, Dr. Logan was one of my dentists.
Is he there?
Mr. Davis on the phone?
No.
Dr. Logan is on the phone.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm still on the phone.
Okay. Did you have a question for Dr. Logan?
No, I thought he had made it, wanted to get on the record, but maybe not.
Did you want to testify, Dr. David?
Mr. Chairman, no, I was really just here to answer questions. The Dental Society is certainly in support of continuing on the dental board, and we don't really have a position as far as the number of years the extension should take place. We bow to the legislature for that.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Logan. Are there questions? David, thank you. Pat, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. In accordance with statute, the Audit Division did conduct an audit of the operations of the Board of Dental Examiners. As a result of that examination, we believe that the board was operating in an efficient and effective manner. There was one recommendation in that report, but it was an administrative recommendation to the division, and it had to do with timely investigations of complaints coming in. We recognize the division has a lot of complaints and issues coming before it, and their priority of taking health safety is important to do first, but there is an expectation that cases and complaints are being resolved in a timely manner. As this community hears other occupational board sunset extensions, you'll hear me talk about the same thing. As it relates to this board, we also did find some of their cases and complaints were not being dealt with in a timely manner. However, the audit team did make a recommendation for an 8-year extension, which is provided in statute. The statute indicates that the occupational boards may be extended up to 8 years, and our recommendation was for an 8-year extension.
Thank you, Ms. Davidson. Questions?
I would.
Senator Pascan.
With respect to the audit and the timely manner of handling claims, had you made any suggestions to them, or are they providing responses to you as far as how they are intending on handling that, or what, if you could fill that in a little bit more?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Pascan, what we did is, besides recognizing the problem of untimely investigations, one of the things we looked at is how their case management system worked. Oftentimes, when you have a multitude of caseload, it's important that you have a case management that will have like a tickler file associated with it. You know, repeated notations about I got to follow up on something, I got to get back to somebody, and their current database didn't have that. They have been looking, and I don't know if it's been purchased yet, but they have been looking at replacing that system to have one that will hopefully improve the ability, and so things just don't get dropped. When we looked at complaints, I think we looked at six complaints and five cases for the Board of Dental Examiners. Three of the six complaints and one out of the five cases were inactive for more than 6 months. And again, I think that they just need to be a little bit more up to speed on where those individual cases are, and I think a little bit of data management would help in that area.
Just following up on that, I've heard comments from individual dentists, you know, about an internal self-policing capacity, and so I was just wondering if you had heard any of that. You know, in other words, it's one thing to monitor it with the case management system, mm-hmm. but as far as the self-policing aspect of it.
Through the chair, Senator Pascvan, actually the investigations and the complaints are actually not a board activity. They're a divisional activity. The board sit as a quasi-judicial arm. So the investigations are handled by the division. Those division people then come report to the board, and the board makes a decision on what action to take. And so, you know, so if we're looking at self-policing as in keeping on top of your own caseload, That's always an important element. However, when you do have, you know, the stack of files that we sometimes see with some of the investigators, having a little data management to help is always a good thing as well.
Further questions for Ms. Davidson? Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, it's more of a question perhaps for the Department of Commerce. I have been involved for the past few years with one of the professional licensing boards, and what you're suggesting about investigations was an issue with that board as well. And I actually thought they were going to get that data management program a couple years ago, and it still hasn't happened. Is it a appropriation issue, that is money to purchase it, or?
Through the chair, Senator Geisel, I think you're right. This is a question for the department, I think, rather than for me. But I would note that this is a continuing issue. If you historically look back at some of these boards and commissions or listen to me talk for the past couple of years, you would hear this issue coming up repetitively.
Thanks.
Senator Geisel, for the questions? Okay, thank you. Commissioner, did you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Senator Egan. I'd like to ask Division Director Don Haberger to join me. He joined the division this last June as Director for Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Haberger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Haberger, and as Commissioner said, I'm the Division Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And yes, we did purchase, actually, the implementation time was before my coming to the division, but it has been purchased. It's a new system. It replaces the older Enforcer system, which I'm not familiar with, but the GL Suites is a program that has been launched. We are still in the learning phase, and we're getting used to this new system. I would love to report to you that all our issues are up to date and we're ahead of the schedule, but quite frankly, we're still in that that phase where we're our investigators are learning that system. So perhaps in the near future, we will have a more complete report.
Okay, questions for either Commissioner Bell or Deputy Commissioner Haberger? Senator Pascan.
Possibly, just so that I make sure I understand it, Ms. Davidson was talking about the distinction between the what goes on in the division and then what goes to the board as far as complaints. If you could more fully explain that so that I understand the procedure of how that works.
Through the chair, Senator Pascben, happy to try a seventh-month stab at it. Investigations by statute is under our purview, and it's something that it looks like the legislature at some time said we need to keep a little bit of a difference between the boards and the professions themselves and the department's a duty to investigate. So as a complaint, for example, that comes in from the public, we will capture that. We have a number. We have a send us an email. We try to advertise for that. We will get that complaint. We will take an initial look at it, or our investigation team will. They'll look at it. They will make a decision at that point in time whether it merits further investigation. They will make that determination. If it does merit further investigation and there is substantial evidence that it violates one of our licensing laws, then they begin to develop a case. At some point in time, they're going to take a recommendation to the board, but before they get to that recommendation, they may have a dentist, for example, on the board who is their review panel. So that dentist or two will review that case. They will say, yes, you're heading in the right direction. No, you're not. We need to step something up because it is a health issue, a public health issue. So we're getting feedback at some point in time. They'll go back and finish the case out. And then it goes back to the board as a whole for we'll make our recommendation based on all that work, and then the board themselves will say, yes, this is the action we want to take against that license.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator Egan, the chair. I wanted to just augment Don's comments with give you a sense of the case and complaint volume. From recent information that as we were preparing for legislative session, looking at our metrics, I know there was 701 case complaints made for the 40 professions that we monitor and support in the division, and that resulted, I'll use round numbers just to give you a sense of a little over 500 actions, and 300 and some had some 500 and some actually went to that next stage that Division Director Don Haberger described, and about 350 resulted in some disciplinary action that it might have been a fine, continuing education, monitoring, auditing. So, again, it gives you a sense of the volume across the 40 professions, but there's that first look, and then if it advances to the next stage, then a much more rigorous examination of the issue.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Senator Pascman.
You know, specifically in the field, and again, individual dentists had approached me with, you know, the time problem, and do you know what the backlog is within that specific area?
Through the chair, Senator Pascoban, I cannot answer that specifically. I do know we have, as a division or through investigations, have taken a number of what we think are proactive measures. Somewhere about the time I joined the division, there was a new chief of investigations, and so we've got that. We're relatively young now. He's been with the division 12 years, if I remember right, but in a role as a chief, that's relatively new. However, knowing that the legislature, or excuse me, the audit reports had a reoccurring theme here, we are looking for ways to manage that. So there's been new blood, if you will, in leadership. He is taking this opportunity to reassign some of our investigators to more precisely match caseload and the professions, and so we're going through that process. And we have, through the new GL suite system, a flagging mechanism. So we think we're on the right track, and I'd have to get back to you on time details.
Further questions for Deputy Commissioner Haberger or Commissioner Bell? Thank you. Again, Senator Davis and Senator Menard, before you were able to get here, I did announce that it was common practice to hold bills after their first hearing, and then we would act on them the next meeting, but we would not act or move bills on the first day that were brought before us. However, it was an executive order that got us out of the thing that we talked about, and we moved it on. Unless they're non-controversial, and I don't know if Senate Bill 59 is non-controversial. It's only an extension now until 2016. However, I would entertain Senator Bernard.
Every reasonable chairperson can change their mind.
Thank you, Senator Menard. Do I hear a motion to extend it to 8 years?
So moved.
Offer a committee substitute to 8 years, and so it would be 2018. Is that correct, Dana?
19.
Or 19. It's now 2016, 5 years. It'll be 2019. And so you offer the amendment?
I'm good with
Senator Pasban offered the amendment to extend it.
Senator
Menard
had made the motion, so. And I think it's appropriate.
I was confused.
Coming from a dental family that you proposed.
Okay, let Senator Menard propose an amendment to extend it to 2019.
Year 2019, 8 years.
Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, would you like to, is this non-controversial? Should we try to move it out today?
I recommend we move it out today.
Call the roll.
Individual recommendations.
Okay, sir, there is no objection. Okay. I'm still learning. So ordered. Senate Bill 59 has passed out of Senate Labor and Commerce and is on its way to finance. And everybody will sign it, and then we'll adjourn and get the heck out of here. Right? We are. Yeah.
What happened on
the,
about that?
No, it's there. It's on the third floor of the parking garage.
Oh, we can just go there. And
yeah. They have your license.
This is going to be.
They do.
Yeah. Yep.
On the third floor.
And Labor and Commerce. Recently.
Okay, anything further to come before Labor and Commerce?
No, sir.
Okay, don't leave until you sign the legislation. And at 2:24 p.m., Labor and Commerce is adjourned.